Aloha. Welcome to Island Issues, our weekly public affairs program about Hawaii Island's people, issues, and concerns. Now, here's your host, Sherry Bracken.
Aloha. Good Sunday morning. Welcome to Island Issues. We're here every Sunday morning at 6:30 a.m. on Koa Country, 107.7 FM, and at 8 a.m. on Lava 105.3 FM. You may listen to this Island Issues and others as podcasts online at lava1053.com and at koacountry1077.com. Click on Island Issues and then on the Island Issues microphone. Last Thursday, I made a little road trip to talk to some of the folks who are responsible for monitoring and informing us about what's going on with our very active volcanoes. And note, this ended up being a two-part interview. Part one airs today. Part two will air in 2 weeks on January 21st, because next Sunday, January 14th, I'd already committed to air the final in my current series of rat lungworm disease discussions. Now, let's get to today's talk story. Today, I'm at Hawaiian Volcano Observatory to get an update on Mauna Loa Volcano. This month, scientists at Hawaiian Volcano Observatory have planned 3 community meetings in areas that could be impacted by a potential Mauna Loa eruption. These areas are Hilo, Ocean View, and South Kona. Although the scientists tell me an eruption of Mauna Loa is not imminent, it seems like a good idea to understand what the potential is. I'm joined today by Hawaiian Volcano Observatory Scientist in Charge Tina Neal, geologist Frank Truesdale, and geologist and public information officer Janet Babb. My understanding of the way things usually work is that the scientists will keep us, the public, informed of the status of our island's volcanoes, and Hawaii County Civil Defense will do additional public outreach and be prepared to act and let us know what to do when an eruption is imminent. So we'll also be talking with Hawaii County Civil Defense Director Talmadge Magno. And I'd like to start with you, Frank Truesdale. Before we talk about Mauna Loa, I'd just like to get a brief update on Hualalai Volcano and Kilauea. At this point, January 4th, is Kilauea Volcano threatening any populated areas?
No. Right now, Kilauea is erupting at the summit at Haleamaumau and on the East Drift Zone. At the East Drift Zone Pu'u'o'o site, lava flows are being fed down toward the ocean and over the Pali, but not really crossing the coastal plain yet. We used to have an ocean entry, but that's finished for now. On Hualalai, basically, there is no activity. The monitors that we have on there suggest that everything is quiet.
Okay, thank you. So let's focus on Mauna Loa. Now, Hawaiian Volcano Observatory has decided to hold community meetings at UH Hilo on Saturday, January 13th from noon to 3, at Ocean View Community Center on Wednesday, January 17th from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., and at Kona Waena Elementary on Saturday, January 27th from noon to 3, to brief the public on the potential and possible outcomes for a Mauna Loa eruption. Why are you doing the community meetings now? And I need to know this because I don't know if that means that you do believe that an eruption is imminent. And let's turn to Tina Neal for that.
Okay. We are hosting these community meetings now as part of our January Volcano Awareness Month, which has been a tradition here at HVO now. This is the 9th annual Volcano Awareness Month, and we decided to host these community meetings because Mauna Loa Volcano has been restless now for a number of years. And even though an eruption is not imminent, the potential for an eruption at some point in the future means that everybody who is potentially at risk from one of these eruptions should understand the volcano, its hazards, the risks an eruption would pose, and what they can do now to prepare for an eruption.
Last time we talked about Mauna Loa was just a few months ago. You have it at a specific alert level. Tell us why you have it at the specific alert level, what that really means, and what you are seeing from Mauna Loa. But start us out with, how impactful is Mauna Loa in general to Hawaii Island?
Mauna Loa volcano covers more than half of the island, and therefore eruptions from this large active volcano have the potential to reach far-flung portions of the island. So really it is of concern to the whole island when it does get ready to erupt and when it does erupt. Because it's another active volcano on the Big Island, HVO puts a lot of resources into monitoring this activity. And as we've been discussing for several years now, it's been restless. And so that's why we're trying to focus some public attention now on preparing for what will be an eventual eruption of the volcano.
Now you say, what will be? Do you have any idea when this might erupt. You've raised the alert level a couple years ago. You haven't raised it in 2 years that I know of. But when do you think something might occur?
Well, very good question. And unfortunately, we cannot say with certainty. Just to recap, we did raise the alert level from normal to advisory in the fall of 2015 after more than a year of slowly accelerating unrest. And by unrest, what I mean is that we were seeing increased rates of small earthquakes below the volcano and also an increased rate of inflation or deformation of the volcano. Both of those are signs that magma is accumulating in the shallow reservoir system of the volcano, which is how a volcano progresses from quiet to eruption. So that is why we raised the alert level, to bring to people's attention that the volcano was getting ready to erupt. The big question is when. Since that alert level was raised in the fall of 2015, we've seen a fairly steady rate of activity with some pauses and short-term lulls. And in fact, right now, we're in a bit of a pause. About a month or so ago, we saw a decrease in the rate of earthquake activity, a slowdown in the rate of deformation. Whether this is the end of this unrest episode and the volcano goes literally back to sleep, or it will return within the next weeks or months, we'll just have to wait and see.
When was the last significant, well, I won't even say significant, when was the last eruption of Mauna Loa volcano?
Mauna Loa volcano last erupted in 1984 for 3 weeks, and prior to that in 1975 for a very short eruption. So this really current period of unrest leading to the next eruption will only be the third eruption in modern times that we've actually watched the volcano go from quiet to eruption.
I want to talk about the eruptive history a little bit so we can understand why you pay such close attention to the volcano. Because as people know, our islands are situated over a hot spot, and as the islands move, the volcanoes become less active and then they become dormant. And so the question is, I mean, you're sort of raising that question in my mind about whether maybe this is the end of Mauna Loa, but I get the sense from the scientists, from you and all the other scientists, that that is not going to be the case. So I'd like to learn a little more about the eruptive history, which may make us understand what we might be looking at in the future. And I think Frank Truesdell is sort of the Mauna Loa expert. Frank, you've been discussing and studying Mauna Loa for a whole lot of years, I believe.
Yes, that's true. If we look at the long-term eruptive history of Mauna Loa, there have been 33 eruptions in the historical period, and I would say that's post-contact from when the missionaries were here. And that's roughly about one eruption every 5 years. Now, the geologic mapping that we've been conducting over several decades now has shown that over the longer period of time, 3,000 years, that Mauna Loa erupts about once every 6 years. So, you know, people say, well, it's on the hotspot and it's sliding away, but with that kind of eruption frequency, it's hard to say that Mauna Loa is a dead or a dying volcano. Ultimately, Mauna Loa will come by the same as the other Hawaiian islands and move off the hotspot, and it will, too, turn into an atoll.
But that's not now.
Definitely not. Because of the signs that we're seeing, deformation-wise and earthquake-wise, Mauna Loa is saying to the general public, hi, I'm an active volcano too.
You have looked at this volcano for a long time, and I've heard you say in the past that many eruptions start at the summit, but sometimes they stay there, sometimes they go someplace else. So talk about the pattern of where Mauna Loa erupts, please.
Okay, so if we look at the historical period where we have the best record, basically half of the eruptions, or approximately half, stay in the summit. That means the fissures break out in the summit caldera, lava is emitted into the caldera, and sometimes lava will spill out of the caldera and go for a few tens of kilometers away. Essentially what that means is not in the place where people live. About a quarter of the eruptions happen along the Northeast Drift Zone, and in 1984, that flow posed a potential hazard for Hilo. About 20% occur along the Southwest Rift Zone, and flows have hit the ocean in 1950, in 1926, in 1919, in 1868, and there have been other flows threatening communities there in 1907 and 1887.
And the Southwest Rift Zone flows go where exactly?
Southwest Rift Zone we define as basically an area from Ho'okena south all the way down to, let's say, Na'alehu.
Okay, so pretty much the South Kona coast.
Exactly. And then we have another class of vents, which are pretty much unknown to most people, that we call radial vents. And these radial vents occur like bicycle spokes on a wheel, with the caldera being the hub, and they radiate away from the summit in the north and west sides. And so there were three radial vent eruptions, 1852, basically went in the direction of Mauna Kea and bypassed the NOAA Weather Observatory. There was an eruption in 1859 from 11,000 feet that entered the ocean at Kiholo Bay on the north side. It actually made that point. And there was a submarine eruption in 1877 where there was a summit phase first and then a submarine eruption just outside of Ke'e where they saw floating rocks, dead fish, sulfur gases.
One of the eruptions that interests me most is the 1950 eruption, because that eruption is when I learned, and I wasn't there for that eruption, but your work on that eruption is when I learned that the lava from Mauna Loa is very much unlike the lava flows from Kilauea. So talk about that eruption, how long it took the lava to get from the top of the mountain to the ocean, some of the issues that were faced. Give us a sense, because a lot of people look at Kilauea volcano as the volcano that's been erupting now for 35 years, and they say, well, you know, the lava comes out pretty predictably, comes out relatively slowly. Sometimes we can get right next to that lava. It can go right by us, and we can look at it and enjoy it. But I don't think Mauna Loa eruptions have traditionally been like that, so tell us more.
Okay, well, basically the composition of Kilauea and Mauna Loa eruptions are the same. They kind of make A'a and Pahoehoe flows, but what's most impressive is the amount of lava that comes out per unit time. So at Kilauea, you have roughly about a meter per second, and in 1950, we had 1,000 meters per second. So there were three lava flows during that eruption that reached the highway, the Kona Highway. The first one reached the ocean in just over 3 hours. The next one was at 14 hours, and the final one at 18 hours. So three lava flows reached the highway in less than 24 hours. There are other examples along that coast where the lava flows reached the ocean in approximately a day or less. So that area is especially a area of interest or concern, in that lava flows can reach the ocean in days to hours instead of weeks to months.
Is that just because the terrain is so steep?
The terrain has a lot to do with the advance of the flow, but the effusion rate there is much higher than any other sector, and the effusion rate is that 1,000 meters per second of material coming out of the ground.
Do you know why the effusion rate is so high?
Well, we can speculate as to why it's so high. You know, the things that would govern the effusion rate would be the magma supply, how much gas is in there, how efficiently the dikes open up, and then we would then look for other parameters. But right now, why is that so high relative to, let's say, the other flank of the volcano? All we can do is go by based on the historical record.
Okay, now we know how much time it took. Do you have any idea how fast that lava was traveling? How many miles per hour?
I'm sorry, I'm a scientist, so I can say it's 10 kilometers per hour, so that would be about 6 miles an hour.
That's pretty fast. I'm not sure I could outrun that.
Yeah, not so sure either. I think the fastest human is about 20 miles an hour, but then you'd be in the Olympics.
And a brief interruption to remind you, this is Island Issues, and I'm Sherry Bracken. We are in the middle of a first of two discussions that we're having with Hawaiian Volcano Observatory scientists Tina Neal, Janet Babb, and Frank Truesdale, as well as a conversation with Talmadge Magno, head of Hawaii County Civil Defense, about the current status and preparations for a potential eruption of Mauna Loa volcano, which is not going to erupt imminently, but the scientists are telling us we do need to be prepared. Next Sunday morning, we'll air the final in our set of discussions about rat lungworm disease with members of the statewide rat lungworm task force, members of the faculty at John A. Burns School of Medicine. And that will air next Sunday morning at 6:30 a.m. on COA Country 107.7 FM and at 8 a.m. on Lava 105.3 FM and then be posted as a podcast, as all of these interviews are, at lava1053.com and at coacountry1077.com. Part two of this discussion will air on January 21st. And note, the first of three community meetings about Mauna Loa will be next Saturday, the 13th, at UH Hilo, UCB 127, from noon until 3. And we'll hear more about that at the end of today's discussion. Let's get back to our conversation.
Do you have any way to predict where a Mauna Loa eruption might begin and where it might go?
Okay, so going back to the historical period, that all of the eruptions have started in the summit. So we anticipate that it will be in the summit. We can't guarantee it, but based on that precedent, we're assuming that it's going to start in the summit. And then we have to actually look to the geodetic data and the seismic data to show us whether or not that magma is moving or migrating into the rift zones. So the long-term statistics say half of the eruption is going to stay in the summit, some go into the rift zones. So we have to actually watch and see. In 1984, a good example, the summit phase started. We looked at the earthquakes. The magma seemed to migrate into the upper part of southwest rift zone. The deformation data showed that. And then it did a 180 and went into the opposite rift zone and then sent flows in the direction of Hilo. So at the time of the eruption, we'll be diligent in watching and seeing what we can tell the public and civil defense.
You mentioned in 1950 there were three lava flows. So I'm getting that the highway, the main highway that travels around the island, was therefore cut in three places?
Yes, the highway was cut. It doesn't really matter if it's one or three. If the highway's cut, the main corridor for commerce or people moving around the island is severed.
Well, that's true. And, of course, I'll be asking Talmadge Magno with Hawaii County Civil Defense about the plan to recover from that. But it also means that communities would be very much isolated. If a lava flow comes and it cuts once, you've just got communities on either side, perhaps. But if it cuts twice, you may have an isolated community. And that leads to a question about 1950. Did people die? And were people in isolated situations where they needed to be rescued?
The short answer is yes, there were a few people who were in ranch lands in that area. They were trapped, and I don't know if, for example, they were out trying to open paddocks and let their animals run free, their cows or whatever. But there was an instance where a guy was trapped between two of the flows, and he hiked all day long and night and appeared at the coast, bloody mess, and then got rescued by a boat. There was a instance where volcano scientists were watching the advance of one lava flow and civil air patrol was up in the air and they noticed that they were going to be outflanked. So they put a little message on a life jacket and tossed it down and then the people evacuated before it was closed off. So hopefully none of that will happen in the future.
Well, I really like the stories that go with your scientific explanation because I think it helps make it extremely real for people. Frank Truesdale, do you have any idea how much in advance you would probably know that an eruption of Mauna Loa is seriously coming?
Well, all I can tell you is that we will continue to watch for increased seismicity, and then we would look for increasing rates of deformation. We look to the past often to see what kind of patterns may result. And the only two eruptions that we have were 75 and 84 in the so-called modern era of volcanology, where we had high-quality seismic instruments, and then later on deformation. In 1975, we had about 6 months of increasing seismicity and deformation, and then we forecast the eruption. In 1984, there was just about a year or so of slowly ramping up seismicity where the earthquakes got to just before the eruption, up to over 100 events per day. And then the deformation rates were in, well, the deformation showed increasing. But the actual forecast of the eruption is very problematic and is the holy grail for volcanologists. So saying that next May 5th on 10 a.m., the volcano is going to erupt is what we're striving to. There are seismic signatures that tell us that an eruption is imminent, but we have to wait for those to occur, and those usually only occur right when the magma is starting to migrate toward the surface.
Okay, so the magma is starting to migrate to the surface, and that's when you consider an eruption to be imminent. How do you define imminent? How much time between that moment? Frank, stop laughing at me. You know that's the kind of question that people want to know the answer to.
Yeah, that's a Tina Neal question, actually. But I'll take it.
You've talked about the magma moving to the surface, and that's an indication that an eruption may be imminent. What is imminent exactly? How much time are we talking? Like, because I want to be able to have people know that they, well, how much notice they might have.
Okay, well, in 1975, there was the characteristic seismic trigger, and that was only about half an hour or so before the actual outbreak. And then in 1984, it was just over an hour or so. But that means the magma was actually moving. Now, in 75, the lava broke the surface, and the eruption stayed in the summit, and everybody was happy because no one was threatened. In 1984, that's a different case, and we didn't know, like I said prior, went into Southeast Rift, turned around and came down the other rift, and we can't forecast that until we see the other characteristic signs saying magma's migrating.
The 1975 and the 1984 eruptions are relatively recent. The 1950 eruption is several decades before Hawaiian Volcano Observatory had the capabilities you do now, and certainly I'm guessing before Hawaii County Civil Defense had quite the mechanism in place they do now. Were there evacuations in advance of any of these lava flows, or was that just a different time and different era?
It was a different time. It was a different era. In 1975, 1984, no. And in 1950, things happened so quickly, people self-evacuated.
Frank, I want to ask Janet Babb about the community meetings, and also I know she did a talk on the 1950 eruption that I want to ask her a couple more questions. Is there anything you'd like to add about Mauna Loa, things you think the public should understand about this particular volcano and how different it is from Kilauea?
Well, I think that the public should recognize that Mauna Loa is also an active volcano, that the impacts from a Mauna Loa eruption are island-wide. Even if you live in Kohala, if the highway is cut, you will be impacted in some way. And that things on Mauna Loa, as far as lava flows go, things develop much more quickly than at Kilauea. And so it's cognizant of the people of the island to be aware of the hazards that this volcano presents.
One more question. Is it likely that ash from Mauna Loa would cause a problem with air traffic?
Well, the plume is certainly high enough, especially for the approaches for both Hilo and Kona airports. And in 1984 and other eruptions, there are reports of Pele's hair landing in the coastal areas. So in 1984, I know that the winds were blowing to the southwest, and people had reported Pele's hair on the car, but that's not in the direction of Kona Airport. But if we had Kona winds, certainly ash or Pele's hair could end up in those northern areas.
Thank you so much, Frank. Tina Neal, I think you wanted to add something.
Frank did a great job of describing how rapidly the volcano can go to eruption in those final stages where magma is moving from the shallow reservoir to the surface, and indeed maybe only giving us 30 minutes to a couple of hours of final warning. However, we have a much better monitoring network in place now than we did in 75 and 84. And what we hope to see is that in the months leading up to that final period, there will be an increase in small earthquakes, perhaps even an increase in larger earthquakes that people feel, and other indicators that we can measure now. And if that happens, there'll be a lot of internal dialogue at HVO about interpreting what we're seeing. We'll be letting the Park Service and Civil Defense know that the volcano may be ramping up a little slowly, but still elevated over its current status. and that we may be moving into a period of a heightened probability of a rapid eruption onset. And so we may even change the alert level of the volcano up one more notch at that point. We will alert the public at the same time, and so people hopefully will have more warning than just those few hours leading up to the very final break at the surface.
That's important to know. And you know, you mentioned you have better monitoring. Just give us something really brief about how do you monitor this volcano and, in fact, all your volcanoes?
People coming to the community meetings can learn a lot more about how we monitor these volcanoes, but we use standard tools such as seismometers to detect earthquakes and other seismicity. We use GPS and tilt meters to detect deformation, changing in shape of the volcano. We have two real-time gas sensors on Mauna Loa. We also are using satellite-based monitoring, radar that looks at the snapshot of the overall shape of the volcano and can detect very small changes, and other satellite data that look for hotspots on the volcano. So those are the standard toolkit, and people can come to the community meetings and learn more about that.
Okay, but I have one more question, which is, there's been talk of cutting federal funding for some things like NOAA satellites. To me, that sounds like a concern, and a lot of people don't really realize how much we do rely on satellite data and other agencies to assist. Tell us where we stand with all that.
To my knowledge, I'm not aware that we are at risk anytime soon of losing key satellite resources.
Geologist Janet Babb, I know that you gave a talk about the 1950 eruption during one of the recent Volcano Awareness Months. I believe it was 2014. It was a pretty exciting eruption, and Frank's talked about it. Just tell us anything more that might be of interest to us before I ask you about the community meetings that are upcoming.
Well, I think one of the stories that really stuck with me was the initial flow that came down from the fissure in 1950. It was in the middle of the night, and you know, people were already in bed or getting ready for bed, and this flow came crashing down through the forest. And in reading the newspaper accounts of that, some people thought the end of the world was coming because lava flows can cause methane explosions and trees were igniting and the flow was crashing through the forest. In some cases, people literally only had time to grab a purse or whatever was nearby and take off up the road to escape. It was coming down through an area, Ho'okanamauka. The Ahupua is called Pahoehoe. So there's a little confusion on the village name. So in some accounts it says Ho'okanamauka, others say the village of Pahoehoe. But those folks, there was a steep slope and they had to get from their houses up the steep slope to the main road. And fortunately there were people with cars that then would help them get on down the road.
Scary time.
It was a scary time, I think, for folks. It was also a very stressful time. In one instance, the parents actually escaped and were taken to safety. But their children, who lived elsewhere on the island, of course, all communication was disrupted by the flow because the lines were broken. And so there was no way to get information out. And so the children assumed the worst. They could see that this village had been destroyed and assumed the worst for their elderly parents. But in fact, they had been rescued and were safe. But they didn't know that for several days.
Janet, you have been instrumental in putting together these three community meetings which are coming up. The first one is this coming Saturday, the 13th of January, at UH Hilo, UCB 127, from noon until 3. What will people see at all three of these community meetings?
We're going to have a lot of displays on various aspects about Mauna Loa particularly. We'll also have some displays on all aspects of Hawaiian volcanoes. So there'll be information about Kilauea, Hualalai, as well as how we monitor the volcanoes, about VOG, about earthquakes, all things associated with Hawaiian volcanoes. But we will be focusing on Mauna Loa. That's the point of these. We'll have displays set up. People can come and go. These Mauna Loa community events are more like an open house. And so we've actually just called them Let's Talk Story because they're going to be more informal. So each event will be open for 2 to 3 hours. And people can come and go. They don't necessarily have to be there for the entire 3-hour period. But they can come and take a look at our displays, and there will be staff from the Hawaiian Volcano Observatory, from Hawaii County Civil Defense, the university, as well as Hawaii Volcanoes National Park there to answer questions. And so it's a chance for people to come and learn more about Mauna Loa and Hawaiian volcanoes, and also a chance to interact with the people who are looking after the volcanoes and watching out for their concerns.
One of the concerns that people will have is, how am I possibly going to be affected? How is my address going to be affected? And you've put out some really great maps that are on your HVO website, but they also are kind of small maps, and it's hard to look at any one particular address, particularly if you live close to boundaries. Is there a way that people can find out specifically if their area is in an affected area?
The lava flow hazard zone map that is available on our website or links from our website is available for download. And so people can download it and blow it up to a magnification where they can see at the community scale where they are with respect to hazard zones. They can also import the file into GIS software and overlay it on the base of their choice. But one thing to emphasize about these hazard zone boundaries is that they're approximate. They're a boundary zone. They're not really a sharp line. And so if the line runs down the center of somebody's street, it's really inappropriate to say something's in hazard zone 2 on one side and 3 on the other with that kind of precision. But at the community meetings, we'll have this map, and people can come and talk to us about where their community is with respect to the hazard zones, and also where they are with respect to the Mauna Loa inundation zones. A new map product that Frank Truesdell authored is available now through our website. It's a planning tool, but it shows some of the broad-scale features of what regions of the island are at risk from lava flows that could erupt potentially from different parts of the volcano. So I think folks will enjoy looking at those maps with respect to where they live and work.
Frank, tell us just a teeny bit more about these maps.
There was a product called the Mauna Loa Inundation Maps. And so recently we've updated those. We actually used empirical data, distribution of past flows, but we've also included some downflow modeling of a fluid. Based on those two inputs, we've refined the lava inundation maps.
Janet, I think your website for Hawaiian Volcano Observatory is just outstanding, but tell folks what they can learn from that website and where to find it.
We really hope that people can come to these talk story events so that they can interact with us and take a look at this information, but all is not lost if they're unable to be there, because we have quite a lot of information on our website. Specifically to Mauna Loa, people can go and find the weekly update. We have some frequently asked questions there that they can look at. Monitoring data is posted there, photos. We also have webcams so people can take a look and see what's going on in the volcano themselves. And as well, we have links to publications, important information about Mauna Loa.
I think that a lot of people during the recent major Kilauea lava flow learned to really appreciate your website. And give us the address for your website.
Really, the easiest way to find our website is just to do a search for the Hawaiian Volcano Observatory. But the URL is volcanoes.usgs.gov/HVO.
Thank you very much.
And a reminder that the community meetings are coming up Saturday, January 13th at UH Hilo University Classroom Building 127 from noon until 3, Wednesday, January 17th at Ocean View Community Center from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., and Saturday, January 27th at Kona Waina Elementary School from noon until 3. Today's conversation has been with Hawaiian Volcano Observatory scientists Tina Neal, Janet Babb, and Frank Truesdell. And in the second part of today's conversation, which will air in 2 weeks on January 21st, we'll also add in Talmadge Magno from Hawaii County Civil Defense. This is Island Issues, and I'm Sherry Bracken. Thank you to our listeners for being with us. Please go to the Hawaiian Volcano Observatory website for more on Mauna Loa and all of our volcanoes. Until next Sunday morning, please, let's all live and drive with aloha. Ahoi ho.
Thank you for listening to Island Issues. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Email us, info@lava1053.com. Join us again next week for another edition of Island Issues, a service of Hawaii Islands Mahalo Multimedia.